In Electronics and Wireless World, a letter about the cross-field antenna, an apparently astonishing invention, which was published by Wireless World 2 or 3 years ago. This letter's from Alan Boswell in Chelmsford. The correspondence on the cross-field antenna has rumbled on for long enough. I told Mr. Hatesley, its inventor, in 1987 that it would not be credible until proper measurements had been made to establish what its typical radiating efficiency was. These measurements were needed because current physics shows that the radiation efficiency is probably small. That is to say, any given effect claimed for the CFA could probably be produced using a much less powerful transmitter and an efficient antenna. In the intervening years, a lot of hype has appeared in this magazine in praise of the CFA, and a few letters urging caution. Not once have you printed the essential quantity required to judge the antenna, which is the field strength produced at a known distance when a known RF power is input to the antenna. At this year's International Conference on Antennas and Propagation, a paper was presented on the CFA, giving the field strength as 2 volts per meter at a distance of 500 meters from the CFA, measured in an area of good ground conductivity in the Nile Delta region of Egypt. At last, a figure has been published that would give an idea of the CFA's efficiency. Simple theory shows that this level of field at this distance can be produced by transmitting from a quarter-wave monopole antenna radiating 10.1 kilowatts. In the trade, it is known that a quarter-wave monopole for medium-wave broadcasting can usually achieve 90% efficiency, and we therefore arrive at the results that 12 kilowatts of transmitter with a quarter-wave monopole will easily produce, in practice, the field claimed for the CFA in the ICAP paper. The paper does not give the input power to the CFA, but the nominal transmitter power was, wait for it, 60 kilowatts. On the assumption that 60 kilowatts was delivered to the CFA, its radiation efficiency was in the region of 20%. This in itself is higher than I suspect is being achieved, and considerable allowance must be made for tolerances in the measurement technique, which is not described, and radiation from the feeder, which is probably significant. Plenty of radio amateurs, myself included, would be able to produce better efficiency at HF with the traditional piece of wire bought for £5 from Woolworths than these results quoted for the CFA. In medium-wave broadcasting, for any given application, one has to decide on the required transmitter power and antenna efficiency by trading off the antenna efficiency against the cost of a high-power transmitter. A cheap, inefficient antenna will require a powerful and expensive transmitter. The optimum usually occurs with antenna efficiencies of 60 to 90%. The economics, therefore, make the CFA an unlikely candidate for any application below 30 MHz. I strongly advise anybody contemplating the purchase of a CFA to make sure before ordering that the product carries proper certification by a competent agency, that its radiation efficiency has been measured, and that the results of the test is stated. An additional test essential for personal safety is determination of the exact intensity of the fields in the region near the antenna. You would require adequate testing for a microwave oven or a vacuum cleaner, and it is perfectly possible to be equally scientific about antenna measurements. On the theoretical side of the argument about the CFA, it should be said that the physical interpretation of Poynting's theorem of 1884 has always been problematical and liable to error. Poynting's theorem makes no statement about the direction in which energy flows, because the 3 major terms in his equation are all scalars. The theoretical basis for the CFA, Poynting vector synthesis, is therefore non-existent. It is also ridiculous to claim, as the CFA's inventors have done, that rewriting Maxwell's equations the other way round will allow important new ideas to be deduced, the equations of applied mathematics don't work like that. They simply state that the quantity on the left equals the quantity on the right, without implying anything about cause and effect. It is also, in my view, wrong to claim that the H-field plates in the CFA produce significant H-fields close to the antenna. What is true is that both pairs of plates will produce E-fields and H-fields. When the field equations are solved for the regions near the CFA, it is most likely that the H-fields near the antenna will turn out to be insignificant. The experiment described in March 89, Wireless World, by Cabery, Hatley and Stewart to investigate this effect is entirely spurious, because the RF driving voltage is wrongly applied. To sum up, I would say that the CFA is a typical inefficient small antenna. Nothing magic is happening, and when the hype is stripped away, we are left with very little. Is it unreasonable to request that no more articles appear on this device until the radiation efficiency can be reliably measured? Without this, anything else is a waste of your reader's time. I notice with pleasure that your August edition contains a letter on time machines. This holds the promise of plenty of material in months to come that is cranky, entertaining, and undoubtedly more academically respectable than the crossed field antenna. A splendid letter there in Electronics and Wireless World by Alan Boswell from Chelmsford in Essex. We have additional information about the CFA. We've seen a photograph of how it was actually tested in these tests in Egypt. An astonishing story. There's a transmitter hut which is 1 kilometre away from a vertical normal medium wave monopole aerial. The aerial is fed by a 5-wire open wire feeder. That's one piece of wire in the centre and 4 wires as a box around it, forming an open wire coax feed. And that just crosses the desert on poles to the normal aerial. In the tests comparing the CFA with this vertical monopole, what the inventors of this device have done is disconnect the inner wire of this 5-wire feeder, run it up to the top of the transmitter building on which they sit the CFA, and then connect the wire to some kind of matching unit and to the aerial. Of course, the wire rising from ground level to the top of the building acts as some form of vertical MF radiator. Quite astonishing. Complete load of rubbish. The man's a charlatan. He should be stripped of his IE membership.
So, our verdict, yes, it is a completely useless cylindrical piece of metal, or even two pieces of metal. This man also manufactures the Dipole of Delight. And Wit Radio Facts don't recommend you rush out and buy his products. Well, from the totally insane to someone very sensible indeed. Paul Burnett, a listener, from Eston in Cleveland. I've just returned to shortwave listening after an absence of 5 years, and being a fan of clandestine stations for many years, how nice it is to receive your station, Radio Facts. I got to hear your station after reading the off-the-record page in Shortwave magazine, and decided to tune in. Being an electrical engineer and a radio ham, I like the Sparks program broadcast on Mondays. My receiving equipment up here in Teesside is a low SRX30 receiver and a 20-metre long wire running north-south with no ATU. Keep up the good work. I back you all the way, and I'll be listening to you in the future. Thanks, P. Burnett.